Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle in 2019. I represent the political center and have on the political right, Senator Dan McKay.
Good morning, everybody.
Nice to have another senator on the program.
Yeah, it feels weird, doesn't it?
Because I've got on the left former Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Hi, Natalie.
Doesn't the show feel more mature, like more stately, more interesting than it was before?
Having the House represented. But what it really feels like is a little warmer because Jim is coming to us from Mexico. Jim, tell us where you're at.
I'm in Cuernavaca, where it's 70 degrees, and it is delightful.
Well, we're jealous.
I'm looking at the NSA's feed of Jim's place in Cuernavaca. Just, you know, it looks really warm. I'm not going to lie.
It looks good. Well, let's jump into the politics of the day, and January 1 hits, and what does Senator Romney do from Utah but put an op-ed in the Washington Post, no less, challenging the character of the President of the United States and the leader of the Republican Party.
So for all of our listeners, I think this is the first time they've ever heard that Romney might be critical of President Trump. Right? This is the first time anybody's heard about it.
Yeah. So the part that's interesting, and Jim, I'll go to you first, but the part that's interesting to me is what goes into the timing, the thinking of doing this before he's even sworn in. What, Jim, give us your thoughts.
Well, I think that Trump has crushed every single Republican who has stood up and decried what Republicans and Democrats in the country are all saying behind closed doors. And for Romney to come out before he's actually sworn in and stand up, and this was, I mean, it was no Hinckley Institute kind of speech, but I'll tell you, it was strong, and it was as strong as Flake and McCain and some of the others. So it'll be interesting to see, is he using this as a jump-off point to run? Where is he going to go with this? And finally, before we let Dan justify the whole thing, look, Trump is Trump. He is what he is. The country knows that. What I keep looking for again and again is the soul of our Utah Republicans. Where is their soul? I mean, I know their gut-wrenching decision has become even more difficult now because they have to choose between Trump and Romney. And I suspect they're going to be wandering off into that cave that Mia Love used to go in, that cave of silence. But sooner or later, Chris Stewart, where do you stand? And we're going to need to know. I think they're in the most difficult position of all.
Yeah. Before we jump to Dan, Jim, I just want to reference your comment to just say that my favorite tweet talking about this was basically a commentator who said that this is going to really upset conservatives, not because they don't like Romney, but because he was willing to speak out and it makes them look bad. Because, you know, this is a president with character problems. Okay, that's from the political middle. Dan, I'm going to go to you, and I want to frame this differently. Okay, I don't want you to have to go defend Trump or anything like that. I just want to know.
Yeah, I'm in a cave, like Jim said.
Okay.
Give me some time in my cave.
Yeah, well, the way I want you to comment on it is when you read the op-ed from Mitt Romney in the Washington Post.
I got two paragraphs in,
and
by the way.
And you haven't read any more than
no.
that? No. Okay, so let me summarize it for you a little bit.
Okay.
I mean, essentially, he said the president had a bad December. Bad things happened. Senior leaders left.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said there's a lot of things he's done that are good. And he mm-hmm. talked about the tax cuts and regulations and whatever. But he basically said the president falls short in representing the public character of the nation. And that, I'll just read a quote from it. He said, a president should demonstrate the essential qualities of honesty and integrity and elevate the national discourse with comedy and mutual respect. Basically, he says you don't have the quality of character that the president should have. So, I don't know. How do you react to that? And just be honest with us, Dan.
Oh, well, I always am. Look, I don't know. When I look at Mitt Romney and I listen to his campaign and I listen to the things that he was saying, I thought maybe we had somebody that was going to be able to work with it. And I think President Trump, even his tweet responses, instead of being, you know, cutting and brutal to Mitt Romney, all he said was, well, Mitt told me he was going to be a team player. And this doesn't look like a team player, Mitt. What's going on? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, this op-ed, as I got in two paragraphs, and as a Utah legislator, I was gut sick over it. Because anybody who understands, when your majority party holds the presidency and you hold at least one chamber of Congress, you want something effective to happen for the state. You want something good, something positive. And when your junior senator is out there punching the president, that's not good for Utah.
Yeah,
now, the question is it good for the country that someone offers this moral voice or this moral high ground? And is there better aspirations that the government, that the president could reach for? Absolutely.
Yeah. So from the political center, I'm really excited for another Republican leader to emerge that represents both the conservative values that I have, but also the strength of character that I seek. Like, it bothers me that this guy doesn't have that. So
Mitt did not win in 2012. I know that's news to everyone else. Mm-hmm. Mitt didn't win in 2012. We can argue about why he won, why he didn't win, right? Trump won. And I think Mitt fundamentally cannot connect in his mind why Trump won.
And
honestly, I think you and I are in the same pool, right?
Sure.
I do not understand a person who violates every single rule that I think exists in politics on how you act.
Having the character to be a good father, or treatment of women, or
garbage is to me. A character is this outside judgment that we place on others. It's amorphous and it's mercurial.
It's very real to me.
No one can actually capture. It's only real in your definition.
Jim, I apologize that Dan and I are going into after each other, but let me ask you this, Jim. When you read it, and as you see this going down, probably have time to do this before the break, but what do you think is the political strategy motivation here? I mean, what are you seeing behind the curtains in Senator Romney in doing this?
Well, if you go back and look at senatorial candidate Mitt Romney against Ted Kennedy in Massachusetts, and then gubernatorial candidate, and then when he ran for president, and then early Trump, and then after Trump was elected, let's face it, Mitt Romney changes his position to meet the climate. The question is, where's the real Mitt? And is this the real Mitt that came out and said, you know what, I got 6 years, and I'm just going to call him the way I see him? It'll be interesting to see who is the real Mitt Romney.
Yeah. I noted some of the political commentary that was going on locally. So Jason Perry, someone I value, he runs the Hinckley Institute of Politics. He said this. He said, clearly he's attempting to address the nation and the world in some way. Before his first official day on the job, Mitt Romney is already shaping the conversation in Washington. So it's showing that he's a U.S. senator, first and foremost. He's not talking about public lands right now.
And it's fair to say that Jason might have written the speech. I mean, they're very close.
Interesting. Well, Dan, do you want to close us out on the Romney Trump thing?
Unfortunately, every time the senator speaks up, says something, does something, I think we're going to be back here having this conversation over and over and over again. And it's super unfortunate because, again, this is – whether we like it, what he's saying or not, it is classic Sideshow Bob type of activity with Washington. Everybody's looking for their own headline. They're looking for their own agenda. And I have not. You notice, you know, everybody said, well, where's his local interview? I loved the local press's response. They were responding to Mitt's Twitter feed. Hey, do you want to talk to the local media about this? Ghost town. And at the end of the day, that's what this stuff is. This is not how are we going to find our way towards solutions. This is, I'm placing my flag on the moon, and I want everybody else to notice that I've been here on the moon. And let's do a whole bunch of new. Hopefully this will burn off quickly.
Should be really interesting. Pat Bagley had a really interesting cartoon with the Salt Lake Tribune where he showed a Boy Scout coming to a fork in the road, and one fork was labeled Trump and the other fork was labeled principles. And it was yeah, Senator
one,
Romney
one
picking
thing that
which
annoyed,
one.
One picky little thing that annoyed me about the op-ed was Romney said something like, I will do what's best for America and my state. And you know what, Mitt, get over it. I know you're trying to pretend you're big and important, but your state is Utah. So next time,
there was
say,
a lot of people that were
I want to do what's right for America and Utah. But it's almost as though he has a hard time saying that he represents Utah. And but who knows? A lot of the country may think he's representing Massachusetts. That. That's a mistake. Matt, you're from Utah. Represent us.
Good point, Jim. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the new DUI standard. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Before we jump to local news, let's just take a few minutes. Start with you, Jim, talking about the federal government shutdown. Jim, I spent the holidays, part of them, down in Zion National Park. I hiked the Zion Narrows in the wintertime with my family, but it did not feel right, because even though the state was keeping the park open, it wasn't fully featured, and there were thousands of visitors there that didn't get the bright treatment from their, you know, hosts. So, Jim, give us your commentary.
It's despicable. It's Washington at its worst. It's Pelosi scoring points. It's Trump trying to yak to the base. And meanwhile, the country suffers. We know we're going to end up paying these people, but we know we're never going to make up for all the work they're missing. It's despicable. I'll tell you, Thomas Wright, the national committeeman for the Republicans and
a terrific Utahn,
he and I could sit down in 10 minutes, maybe with Dan yelling in the background, on the back of a napkin, we could straighten this out. It ought to go something like, out of a trillion-plus dollar budget, give them $4 billion, and then let all of the dreamers in, and everybody wins, and we get everybody back to work. This is doable, but as long as they all smell good things for their base, this thing could go on and on and on and on. It is outrageous, and I think we ought to diselect all of them next time if they don't settle this, because there's just no reason for it.
Dan, as I toss it to you, I want to localize this a little bit by saying I saw the news reports that Congresswoman Mia Love, you know, once she lost her election, just didn't attend meetings anymore, didn't vote, wasn't present in Washington. I don't know how accurate those were, or if it was, 100%. But it bothers me, after visiting the National Park this weekend, that the Utah congressional delegation doesn't unify as a body and object to this and exempt these national parks from this closure. And even if they weren't successful, it would make me feel good as a constituent that they tried.
They are trying. Don't be discouraged.
That's not how I understand it.
CNN has not picked it up like they have the Romney op-ed, you can't be totally disappointed.
I think that the Tribune reporter in Washington would pick up on this. I'm not talking about the national things. I'm thinking the Tribune has someone that's full-time there, and I think that he would have picked up on this. But there were 11,000 visitors at Zion National Park on one of the days when I was down there. 11,000.
Yeah, it's a lot.
You know, and then I looked at the parking lot, and, you know, it's people from all around the world.
Yeah. And their government has
shut down. I feel like
the people that represent
me in Washington don't share my views on that. And so you live in Mia Love's district. I mean, why wasn't she fighting for us here?
I don't know. I can't speak for Mia Love. I can't speak for Chris Stewart or Rob Bishop. I can't. I don't know what they've been doing, so I can't, They obviously have not done as good a job as posting their flag on the moon and screaming like Mitt Romney
has. How hard would it be to just exempt the national parks from the shutdown?
It would be really hard. At the end of the day, and here's why. Everybody has
their 50 states,
and you know this better than everybody. Everybody has something in the federal government that's absolutely essential to their district not shutting down. And as a result, how do they make you feel the pain? There you go. We are into what? I think this is day six of the shutdown.
And we have a president who's saying, you know, I'm not going to give, so there's no end in sight.
Yeah. But remember, President Obama, at his midterm change, right after Obamacare was passed, and the Republicans threatened to defund, guess what he did? Shut down the government. 16 days. So everybody at that time in the press blamed the Republicans for the shutdown then. Here we are, fast forward, it's the Republicans' fault again. At some point, I'm just saying, at some point, Jim, you and your people have to take some responsibility for freaking something. You can't just run around and hide in Cuernavaca and complain about the fact that the government's shut down and just enjoy the sunshine while the rest of us are being baked in the sun as though we're the only one at fault.
Jim, I'll let you respond.
If it was my job, I would damn well be in Washington getting it straightened out. And you know, we want to talk about the all-time finger-pointing. That goes to Mike Lee and his buddy from Texas, Ted Cruz, who single-handedly shut down the government for 23 days and cost $23 billion to the economy. I mean, stop the selfishness. Yeah. I would lock them in. Ben McAdams and the rest of you ought not to take any salary. Why should you guys get paid? I mean, take this thing seriously. We're sick and tired of it. And you want to hear me say, Nancy Pelosi, get off your butt and get this thing solved and stop trying to score points? There it is. We're just sick and tired of it. They're all doing well and they're making their little base happy. And meanwhile, we're crumbling. That's what we need to solve. And I'm sick and tired of it. And I think the American public is too.
We're not crumbling, Jim. Let's not overstate this. The government shut down 6-7 days ago now. And everybody's, you know, living life like
they
did before.
It's embarrassing. Though federal workers are about ready to get unemployment checks.
No doubt. And they're going to get paid back for wages.
Dan and Jim, think of this for a minute. There's always a story.
Shut it down more often. Let's take the summers off.
There's always a story behind the story. And we all know that what the story is that this is about funding the wall. But the wall is just a symbol. And we all know that.
Yep.
It's just a symbol. And what I can't believe, so just if you look at the numbers, when you look at undocumented people in this country, it's somewhere in north of 40% are people who overstayed their visas. Has nothing to do with crossing the river, the Rio Grande, you know, with kids on your shoulders. It's people who come here legally and stay. The wall has no impact on a huge share of the problem. So it's sitting out there as a symbol, and we're shutting our government down over it. It really bothers me because it's not real public policy. It's politics.
I'd shut it down more frequently, though. So you're looking at the wrong guy for a lot of sympathy.
Oh, Dan.
Just shut it down more frequently.
I need to work on you off the air.
I know. Well, it's
all right. We need to go
2019.
We need to go to more local issues. Jim, I'm going to go to you first because you're the guy that has been so vocal up in the legislature about the new 0.05 blood alcohol limit, the new DUI standard. I saw an interesting column by Robert Gerke in the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm going to let you summarize it because you know the data better than I do.
Look, this was an issue desperate for a solution that is not there. I mean, this is the phoniest issue to come along. Norm Thurston, the freshman representative from Provo, came up with this harebrained idea. There is no scientific evidence, none, zero, zip. It just came out of the morality play that is the House, and it caught like wildfire, and it made bad, bad, bad law. We had one DUI, the science shows in Utah, that death in 2017, this is after scouring through the records, one death. And that one death was a person who was at 0.05%, 0.5% DUI. But they also had methamphetamines. They had other drugs. And it's very hard to say that that's the reason.
And they were on a suspended license, if I remember correctly, Jim.
And they were on a suspended license. So with this crusty non-scientific evidence, they're going to drag 1,000 people, the Department of Public Safety estimates, through the whole DUI system this year, including the courts and clogging them up and highway patrolmen and officers' times, 1,000 people for virtually no scientific reason other than Norm Thurston's piousness. This is going to hurt us in so many ways. And I predict, sadly, there's going to be more deaths because as we're taking that woman, that 125-pound woman who had one glass of wine and running her through the DUI system, going zooming by, is going to be that 1.2 death person who is going to be zooming by because everything is so clogged with these non-drunk people. Get a clue before you make laws is what I say.
Jim, you are so colorful. And just the image of the 125-pound woman with one glass of wine, pretty good. Dan, you're in the House. Norm Thurston's in the House.
I voted against the bill.
Okay, so you heard all the debate and
but
stuff.
I was
How
wrong.
Do you read this? Make the case.
Yeah, so my whole thing, I voted against the bill, and Jim has applauded me in the past and said that was the right move. I look back on it and I think, I'm not sure I was right with that vote. The federal highway and transportation standards say 0.05 is the right measure to send a message to drivers to keep them off the highway. Jim, the decreased number of people who are arrested for DUI is a direct result of everyone knows Utah's not messing around with DUI. Don't drink and drive. The message is very simple. The law is very clear. Just, I mean, my goodness.
Why not make it zero? Why not? Then if that's what you're saying, stop playing around because nobody knows exactly where 0.5 DUI. Have the guts to stand up and say, fine.
We want heavier guys like you to be able to have a
drink. We tolerate no drinking and driving and do it.
We want heavier guys like you to be able to have a drink and enjoy it, you know, and not shut you down completely.
But both of you make point. To me, the issue
here. Fat, Dan.
to me, the issue here is public safety, and you just have to focus on that. And Dan, you're saying that they're sending a signal that keeps others off the road.
Yeah.
And Jim's saying, but the data shows that, you know.
What does the data show?
Well, that the one instance where we've had a death, there were all these other things that were really responsible for it, not the 0.05.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's going to hurt. More people are going to be dead because of this law than without it. That's what's going to happen. And it's this, I'll tell you what a lot of people in the state think,
Australia,
that it's the same old thing of a lot of people who don't drink, trying to impose their moral values unscientifically on the rest of us as a way to punish us. And that's something that really hurts our community. And we need to have a lot more discussion about these kind of things because the whole system was clogged. And it wasn't a very good system that brought about this terrible law.
One more topic before we go to gripes. I just want to hear from both of you, mostly Dan, but Jim, you can give us your take. Dan, start of a new year, a new legislature is about to convene. What's going on? What should listeners be watching for, looking for?
Bills are starting to firm up. You know, I wanted to post on Twitter today. Based on what I'm hearing, I think we could take 2019 off. You know, we'll come up with a budget. We could probably, let's shut down the Utah State Legislature as well.
Wow.
Give everybody a year off. I mean, I'm not hearing anything
that's really substantive or
that needs to change. I mean, there's some things around Medicaid expansion that we probably need to hem up. There's a couple little things that need to be, you know, fixed up. But for the most part, I just hear minor stuff that we could probably take the year off.
Yeah. Jim, any quick commentary and then we'll go to gripes.
I hope that was not the veiled threat of we're going to mess around with what the people did on Medicaid expansion because they were pretty clear on that. And although the people were clear on that with cannabis, the legislature didn't seem to be affected. So keep your hands off Medicaid, Utah legislature.
Wow. Okay. I don't have any insight there to share, but let's go to gripes. Dan, we're going to go to you and then Jim, you can follow.
All right. It is. It's a new year. It's time for new goals, new objectives. And when I walk in and I'm trying to figure out what to complain about every year, I want to be focused more on what's positive in 2019. And so when I look at the gripes, I wish that there was a way to quote what Jim said, that everybody put away their swords and could work on fundamental issues. The back of the napkin way of doing things, Jim, you and Thomas scratching things out, I'm in. How do we do more of that? We do it here in Utah, and the reason we do it here in Utah is because the Republican Party has a supermajority. And the states that I think are run well, you see a lot of supermajority-ness, so stop complaining. At the end of the day, Utah is run really well, and I would love to see the federal government try more of it, but I don't think they can do it, Jim.
Jim, your gripe.
I'm just going to let that whole thing pass. I'm going to say my gripe is January 1st, the Utah legislature and governor agreed on the clean air tax so that we have a special new tax for clean air vehicles, leading the way to make sure that no good deed goes unpunished. Can you imagine? We have a clean air tax. Thank you, legislature. Thank you, Governor Herbert.
Right on. Hey, you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm with Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. The program is now produced by Anthony Scoma. We're excited to work with you, Anthony. Thanks, everyone, for listening.